Hello and welcome back to the Dive and Dig News Podcast. My name's Professor Lucy Blue, and this week I'm going to be interviewing two colleagues from the University of Cranfield, Dr. Peter Campbell and Dr. Lisa Briggs. Peter and Lisa have formed a collaboration to do some survey work in the Straits of Sicily, but this survey work is taking a very different nature. The area there is very deep, and they are using some relatively new technology to survey large areas of the seabed. And I went to talk to them about how their first season went. It's great to be able to talk to my friends and colleagues, Dr. Lisa Briggs and Dr. Peter Campbell. And I know, because HFF actually supported this project, that you have not long returned from a very exciting project, actually, I believe, from the little glimpses of information I've caught in Sicily. So I was hoping you might be able to just tell us a bit about this. Your project has a really curious title. It's called Democratizing Deep Water Survey. So I was wondering if you could tell me exactly what you mean by how is deep water survey democratized?
Oh, thank you, Lucy. Yeah, we're so delighted to be here. And we're really excited to start on this project, Democratizing Deepwater Survey. We just completed our first field season. And what we really wanted to accomplish was to demonstrate that in order to do deepwater survey, it's no longer necessary to have $1 million ROV or $1 million AUV. And that now technology has moved on to the point where there are micro AUVs that you can get for around 70,000 euro, which significantly increases the number of individuals, departments, and research institutes that might be able to scan the seafloor for cultural heritage material.
No, absolutely. That's a really good point, because I think that's been the thing that has really held us back, hasn't it, in the past, is the poor maritime archaeologists don't have enough money for the appropriate toys that we would like to be using. So that's really reasonable. And I think the other thing that you've been doing is using them on multiple numbers of these. What's the type of kit exactly you're using?
Yeah, so these are micro AUVs made by the company Seber, and they're Yuko scans. And so they're all fitted with little side scan units and cameras. And so we've been running three of them at the same time, and they can cover huge amounts of area individually, but together they cover, you know, massive areas. And so not only can they do side scan sonar at different resolutions, but also take photos and videos of the seafloor. The ocean is vast, and the majority of it is far from land. And so when we're talking about democratization of deep water survey, you know, you're talking about exploring areas that have never been seen, that are far, that have untold discoveries to be made. So it's really exciting deploying these micro AUVs, whereas one kind of large scale AUV might cost in the millions. Deploying these three small ones, you know, can be afforded by, you know, an archaeology unit or a university.
Do they go off on different trajectories? How do you corral them? How do you stop them banging into each other? How do you determine at what point they're collecting data? Is that a continuous process? Sorry, there were lots of questions in there, but it's curious because that is so innovative, and we haven't seen that happen in that manner before. And I imagine the seabed area you could cover as well. Anyway, one question at a time.
Yeah, so the Seber Yuko scan comes with an in-house programming software called C-Plan that allows us to plan a little mission for the AUV to go on. So what we would do is we would select separate areas of the seafloor for our simultaneous deployments of the micro AUVs, and we would try to have them start in different areas. It was a bit tricky because we definitely didn't want them to go anywhere near each other and potentially bump into each other on the seafloor. But then we tried to get them to surface in similar areas. So then what you do is you take from your research vessel, you take a smaller vessel, like a rigid inflatable boat, a rib, out to sea to go collect them by hand. And it's most efficient when you can collect them close to each other and close by.
So what sort of area would one machine do in say a day's deployment, or however long you're programming it for?
So it depends on the aims of your survey and what you're trying to do. So if you're, mapping a known scatter of something, then you might have a higher resolution, tighter lanes, that sort of thing. But if you're just looking for coverage, right? Because when you're talking deep water, open ocean, you just want coverage because you have no idea kind of where wrecks might be. Then you can kind of spread things out. So use, like a 200 kilohertz and really spread things out. And then it can cover on a single dive, 3 square kilometers, something like that. And what we were doing was we were doubling up. So we had shifts. So we had kind of a large team working on this. And so we would have a morning shift and an evening shift. And so each robot could cover, 3 square kilometers. There's 3 of them and 2 shifts. And so, potentially, as long as weather and everything is running, is allowing for operation and all the equipment's running right, and you can cover huge amounts of area.
No, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? So, how deep can they go? I mean, is there a limit? Presumably, there is.
Yes, the limit of the Seabird EcoScan is 300 meters, which generally is quite deep and it is impressive. On the other hand, the Strait of Sicily, where we were working this summer for our first fieldwork season, goes to upwards of 700 or 800 meters. So we also did have to program that quite carefully to ensure our robots remained safe and didn't attempt to dive down below the level at which they could operate safely under pressure.
No, that's really not going to be very good, is it? If they spot something, though, no, I know that doesn't work like that. But yes, you want them to come home. So why did you choose the Straits of Sicily? What was the research rationale for that one?
Well, the Strait of Sicily is kind of one of those great maritime highways in every time period. There's evidence of obsidian trade in the Neolithic. And then, it was one of the key arenas during World War II. So in every time period, you have people traveling back and forth through the strait. And so we were really excited to work with the Soprintendenza del Mare, identify areas to go survey. And it was a great privilege to work, in Sicily, in this historic strait, looking for sites from every time period.
No, absolutely. Well, I mean, it's the crossroads of the Mediterranean in a way, isn't it? So you're quite right. There's going to be a lot of seafaring activity. And but you mentioned also that some sites you had already prior knowledge of. How did you do your data collection in advance? So some were targeted surveys. How did that process work?
Yes, we came to Sicily a few months in advance to do some ethnographic research with communities of fishermen. So this is a method that was first developed, I mean, decades and decades ago for underwater archaeologists to consult with, especially sponge fishermen in the Eastern Mediterranean, to try to locate wrecks of great antiquity. So it's really fascinating that here in Sicily, there's these areas that they call afferiture, which can be loosely translated as an area that breaks the iron or stops the iron. And I think the reason why they call this that is because there's long iron cables inside the trawler nets that they use in deep sea trawling. And so whenever a trawler net snags on an underwater obstacle, it breaks that iron or stops that iron. So this can either be in a rocky outcrop, or in some instances, it can be an ancient shipwreck. So local fishermen have marked these efferature on their maps, and they know it as an area to avoid.
So had they actually recovered material before? I mean, had they got things caught in their nets?
There's a wonderful museum in Mazara del Vallo, which is just a museum of finds from the strait, and it's just full of amphoras, of course, which you would expect, these ceramic jugs from ancient shipwrecks, but also, marble columns and bronze statues and medieval objects. So, I mean, it runs the gamut of what's been pulled up. And the fishermen, Mazara del Vallo is one of the major ports in the kind of the southwest side of Sicily. So fishermen have always been coming back there, and so they deposit their finds into that beautiful little museum. And so you can kind of see how there's so much material coming up in fishing nets that there's great potential for searching within the strait where the fishermen are.
Yeah, amazing. Bringing up statues in your fishing net, that's doesn't happen every day. So how productive were you? I mean, this is clearly the first time that these AUVs have been used in this manner, and certainly the multiple nature of deployment. And was it effective? Did you find it seems to me like it was that was. Well, you seem pretty excited by it, so it seems like it did it work.
We were really delighted with the results from the first season. Despite the fact that we had obvious challenges that come with all marine survey or deep sea projects. So, for example, I think that we were unable to work for about 25 or 30% of the days due to weather and really high seas, which made it too dangerous to even go out in our large research vessel. But we did accomplish around 75% of the days that we had planned. And over the course of those days, we surveyed over 75 square kilometers of seafloor. And we did it with a budget that was minuscule in comparison to other budgets of projects that utilize autonomous underwater vehicles. So we were really delighted with that progress that we made this year.
Wow, that's amazing. And so what sort of things were you finding? I'm assuming you found some stuff. I hope you found some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it runs the full gamut. So, I mean, ancient and historic, you see potential aircraft wing. So it kind of runs the full gamut of all different time periods and kind of speaks to the use of the channel in all different time periods. So
were you finding amphora wrecks, amphora mounds, or individual amphoras, or... presumably not any more bronze statues, but unless you were very lucky. Is that the sort of resolution that it can pick up a single amphora, or is it more a concentration of material?
Well, so it depends on which sonar system is being used in terms of what it can pick up and what it's looking for. And most of the time we were scanning kind of the widest swath possible to get as much coverage, because the trick to deep water survey, you know, is just time and coverage. The more coverage you get, the more you're going to find. We found anchors and this sort of thing and historic wrecks.
But so were you happy with the finds as well as they obviously did very, you made good coverage in terms of the area, but were you happy with the results in terms of finds?
Yeah, I think, it demonstrated that the methodology is very effective for covering large areas and getting out there for longer periods of time covering large areas. And, you know, we expect to find incredible things in the future.
Mm, absolutely. And how did so what about those HFF scholars? I know you took on some regional participants so that they could benefit from, you know, this experience and learning from your project. How did that go? Were they helpful? I hope they were.
Yeah, the HFF scholars participation in the project was probably the best part of our entire field work. They brought so much energy and really interesting ideas to the project, and it gave us insights and ideas for other applications which we hadn't even considered. One great thing about working with SeaBur, the company that produces these autonomous underwater vehicles, is that they're really quite new, and they're very innovative, and they like to think about ideas on how you might be able to modify these AUVs. So a number of the scholars kind of helped us think of ways that we might be able to modify the AUVs in the future in consultation with SeaBur. So, for example, there's some parts, the front of the AUV is called the payload, where you would load up things like the transducers that could do side scan survey. But we looked at ways where we might even be able to 3D print a new payload that could have, for example, more powerful lights to get better resolution in videos that you take of really deep sea areas underwater where the natural light doesn't filter down to that extent. And so there were all kinds of ideas and insights that we got that we probably never would have if we hadn't had these wonderful scholars come and participate on the project.
In addition, having the scholars there, it really spoke to the democratization through micro AUVs. And the SeaBur software and equipment is so intuitive to use that after just a very short kind of orientation and training, the HFF scholars were able to program missions, deploy them, recover them, look at the data for processing. In a very short amount of time, they're all experts in how to deploy these. So the micro AUVs, you know, they're not just cheaper. They're also highly effective as, following a simple training, anybody can deploy these.
Yeah, that's really good, isn't it? Because that often is the case. You collect all this data and then you have to send it off to somebody that only has, you know, this sort of very specific knowledge that's taken years to accumulate. But if you can actually analyze it in the field. That's really interesting. Well, we'll have to look into, and perhaps some of the scholars were also coming up with ways that they could be deployed in their own regions as well, in terms of the Eastern Mediterranean.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think they're thinking of projects in their own regions. They're thinking of, potential PhD topics, this sort of thing. So a lot of them, all of them left very excited and thinking of applications for these in the future.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for that. I really appreciate that. I've got one other question, though, because I know that with some of the equipment we've been using in the Eastern Mediterranean, okay, it's not generally at such depth, but they have quite considerable problems with currents sometimes, with the, sort of being pushed off course. Well, did you find that at all? Or I guess it's to do with the weight and the way it's programmed. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so there's lots of benefits and limitations to these undersea technologies. And so different robots are more effective in different conditions. And so, a big part of the project was learning like how to plan the missions most effectively to maximize coverage and the data recovery. And there's certainly certain conditions, they're smaller units, they're not as heavy, and so they can get pushed by currents. And so you just need to plan them so that they go into the current rather than get pushed sideways with the current. One of the cost saving things is they don't have the same kind of obstacle avoidance as some of the larger units. And so you need to plan missions running parallel to rock ridges and this sort of thing. And so they're very effective when you understand how they work and then plan the missions around those. And so, that was certainly part of the learning process. But in the end, they were very effective for kind of covering large areas once we kind of understood how they operate.
No, that's perfect. I think that's absolutely right. That's what we should be doing with these things, isn't it? Is working out what they can do for us rather than just assuming they can do everything in all conditions, which is rarely the case. So that's brilliant that you... I don't like the idea of them not being able to avoid obstacles, though. That would slightly worry me when they're sent off to the blue yonder. But anyway, you'd have to really plan well then, wouldn't you? But... that's really good. I'm glad it went so well. And I'm really, really pleased. I'm really looking forward to seeing the report and the full results and everything. But it sounds like you've really latched onto something that could be really beneficial for maritime archaeologists, not just in the middle of the Mediterranean, but across the globe, potentially. Something we can do when we can afford for once. So and get some good results by the sounds of it. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, one of our sort of unexpected results was how amazing the results were in terms of assessing the marine biology of the Strait of Sicily. So given the fact that this is actually quite offshore, so the Strait of Sicily, it took us about 7 hours of sailing from Sicily to get into the middle of the strait. What we found were really pristine reefs, with an incredible amount of diversity down on the reef. It was really stunning to see. And so, as we talked about before, one of our favorite aspects of these micro AUVs is the integrated camera. So not only do we get the side scan sonar data, but we can immediately look at the feed from the integrated GoPro camera to see what we were detecting by side scan sonar. And as we would rifle through the footage after each mission, we were just in awe of the beautiful communities of coral and sponges and algae that we discovered in the video footage. So now, in addition to writing up our results from the archaeological survey, we're planning a series of publications with marine biologists to assess specifically some of these more rare types of coral that you hardly ever find, which we detected in multitudes in the Strait of Sicily.
And quite often it feels quite barren nowadays, but it's sort of reassuring in a way that there's still diversity and life at depth, if not on, I guess it's result of fishing and all the rest of it. But still, that's really exciting. That's brilliant. Fantastic.
Yeah, I could not agree more, Lucy. We've all done lots and lots of diving on submerged cultural material in the Mediterranean, and it is often quite barren and rocky. And the extent of the colors and the diversity of the reef, I've never seen anywhere else in the Mediterranean. It was really, really first heartening to see, and then also just visually stunning. So we're really excited to collaborate with colleagues in other fields to look at the preservation of the marine biological communities we found there.
Wow, that's great.
It's a great direction if we're thinking about the future of maritime archaeology. Not only is deep water survey becoming kind of more democratized and available to broader kind of stakeholders, but also trying to solve some of these global challenges of climate change and kind of understanding our changing planet. And, you know, a lot of the Strait of Sicily was dry land at the last glacial maxima, so 18,000 years ago, and then slowly was covered by water up to 5,000 years ago. And the AUVs operate at just the perfect depth. So, you know, the shallowest, you know, is around 120 meters, depending on where it is. And so the fact that these AUVs go down to 300 and then, you know, and shallower means that we're covering the bits that were always submerged as well as the bit that was dry land. And so working with different fields like ecologists, we can kind of see the changes across like deep time. So it's really exciting in terms of maritime archaeology becoming more accessible, but also, you know, accessing greater funding and publishing in kind of high impact journals and working with scientists in lots of different fields.
Yeah, the benefits of multidisciplinary approaches cannot be overstated, I don't think. But yeah, wow, that's really exciting. Well, I'm really thank you both so much for sparing the time. It's a really, really impressive project on so many different levels, and I presume there will be a phase two. Well, that's the objective. How much more of the Straits of Sicily have you got to record? No, maybe you should. I can't do all of it, obviously not the deep bits, but is that the intention, more or maybe somewhere else, maybe one of the areas that the scholars suggested? I don't know.
Yeah, well, we've embarked on a 3-year partnership with the Soprintendenza del Mare, Regione Sicilia. So we have another 2 years of fieldwork that we can do here in the Strait of Sicily. And then, yeah, we would absolutely love to take this methodology that we've developed all around the Mediterranean, if not further afield.
Sounds fantastic. Well, thanks to Lisa and Peter, and of course the superintendente, I'm bound to not get that right, Del Mare of Sicily, for the permission to do the work, the Honor Frost Foundation for funding the work, and of course the wonderful Honor Frost scholars who contributed to the project that seemed to bring a new sort of ingestion of life into the project. And I'm really looking forward to hearing the full results and what happens next. It's clear that the use of this technology in its multiple multiplicity, should we say, is a really effective way and a relatively, you know, cost-effective way of recording large areas of the seabed. So I think this is an AUV that has legs and that will be used more in the future by archaeologists. So it's all very exciting. And let's not forget that this Sicily was a very key stomping ground, an area that of Honor Frost, our patron. Honor worked in this region for a very long time, from the 70s onwards, when she discovered that the shipwreck of the Marsala, which is now on display in the museum in Marsala. And in fact, this very week, our chair, Alison Katie, was in Marsala with some of the other trustees to celebrate the naming of a street outside the museum after Honor herself. So lots and lots of relevance to Honor Frost and to the foundation in the Central Mediterranean. And thanks very much to Lisa and to Peter for a really interesting interview. So on behalf of the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that supports the research into maritime archaeology in the Eastern Mediterranean, I'd like to thank you for listening, and please do tune in again soon to our Dive and Dig News podcast.